You're about to hear a relaxed three-way conversation featuring the head of impact finance at a Dutch multinational banking and financial services corporation and a bright young Rwandan agro-processing entrepreneur whose company makes bread and other baked goods out of sweet potato. My name's Andile Masugu, and this is part four of African Tech Roundup's seven-part deep dive into the progress being made in advancing entrepreneurship and job creation in fragile regions of Africa and the Middle East. On this episode, you'll learn about the resilience and business savvy required to launch a company while young in one of East Africa's most promising economies and come to terms with the caliber of innovative thinking that legacy financial institutions must acquire in order to back budding entrepreneurs in frontier markets like Rwanda. A very big thank you to Spark for partnering with us to present the series. Now, Spark is a Dutch NGO that's backing many promising entrepreneurs in fragile regions of North and Sub-Saharan Africa and the Middle East. And I'll be sharing a little more about them later. But in the meantime, do visit spark.ngo to learn more about the opportunities they're creating. That's spark.ngo. This podcast series was taped at the fringes of Spark's 7th annual Ignite conference in Amsterdam and is an independent African Tech Roundup production. The opinions expressed by me, your host, and those of my guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the presenting sponsor, Spark.
Hi, my name is Iroji Sumujaneza. I'm the director and co-founder at Car Group.
My name is Roy Bujhawan. I've been a banker for more than 25 years.
Welcome to the African Tech Roundup, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What does being a co-founder of the Car Group entail?
Actually, Car Group is a youth-ready company. We are doing agribusiness, mostly sweet potato processing, where we are making pastries out of sweet potatoes like bread and cakes, biscuit, etc. And we started back in 2014 with my colleagues. We started in the same high school.
Is that common where you're from to turn sweet potato into pastries, or is that an invention of your own?
I can say that it was the first time in Rwanda, and normally sweet potato is considered as food for poor or food for people who are living in rural areas. So variation of it, it was not there.
And yet it's a really nutritious, high fiber.
Of course, yes. We had different varieties, but in 2012, that's where we the government brought some new variety, which is orange fresh sweet potatoes, which is the one that have nutrition content. And then actually that's how we get inspired, by using those ones to make other foods, because people wasn't interested to eat sweet potato in normal way, like boiled on something else. Yeah, because of the urbanization and also the economic development of the country.
So, I mean, Roy, you work for ING in the capacity of head of impact finance. You've been with the company since 2001, from what I can tell. Is that right?
Well, a bit longer.
You're kidding, right? That's legendary these days.
It is certainly legendary. I think one of the dinosaurs. So it is more than 25 years.
I wonder what goes through your mind when you hear a young entrepreneur like Regis, you know, without knowing any fundamentals of his business, without knowing how well it's doing. Perhaps you're not even a fan of a sweet potato. Perhaps you are. What's the first thing as a banker, as the head of, you know, impact finance at your organization, what goes through your mind when you hear him introduce himself and his business this way?
Well, it brings me back to my own youth. I was born in Suriname, Latin America. And as a young boy, I also grew sweet potatoes and watermelons, etc. I sold them on the streets when I was, I think, 7, 8 years old. So I really understand what it means to be a micro entrepreneur in that sense. And as a banker, I've been financing micro entrepreneurs worldwide. I think till date, more than 1 million loans provided. I've been educating, especially women entrepreneurs, more than 25,000 of them, and trained more than 450. Women to set up their own business. So, I'm really very supportive for entrepreneurship, and especially micro entrepreneurship. I think it's the best way to create your income and make a living out, and not be dependent on social securities, etc. So I'm really a strong advocate for entrepreneurship.
If you were trying to determine the investability of his entity, again, now you're going from the nostalgia of knowing what that must feel like to be in his position, so, you know, in the position of someone like Regis. Once you sort of pass that and you put on your banker's hat and you start to ask the question, is this business worth investing in? What are some of the questions that immediately come to mind?
Well, you know, the surprising thing is that in general, when people think about getting a loan from a bank, they think you have to have the right assets, collaterals, income, stable income.
Isn't that true?
The first thing is that we look to the entrepreneur. Is it a good entrepreneur, you know? And it is more important, let's say I make the distinction between ability to pay and the willingness to pay, you know? The first and most important thing is willingness to pay back, you know? Trust in entrepreneur. And then the rest will come, the financial assessment, etc. So that is the first thing I will look at. And especially when you look to small entrepreneurs and micro entrepreneurs in developing countries, the willingness to pay is the most important part, because it's an informal economy. Incomes are unstable, you know, you make some profit, next month you will make some loss, etc. But when it is a trustworthy person, and it is person that has the willingness to pay, then I would be interested and willing to invest in this entrepreneur.
How many people work for you right now, Regis?
We have now 12.
And so take me back to when you and your co-founders sat down and thought, one, let's start a business, and then talk me through, two, how, you know, you decided on this business.
Actually, it started back in 2014 when I was at university. So I did agriculture economics and agribusiness. As a person who grew up in the rural area, and I used to eat almost 3 times a day sweet potatoes. So normally sweet potato in 25 years back was among the basic food in our country. But after now 25 years, so many people has a lot of options of food. So that's cause that not mostly the urban people don't interested in eating sweet potato again. And as a person who did agriculture economics, when I was in the third year of my university, I was looking something on working on my subject in a dissertation. And I looked around in my community, and I found that actually sweet potato has a lot of post-harvest losses because of the culture of how the people are taking it. And I say, oh, why people are considering sweet potato like this? Sometimes there was, I think it was in 2000, there was a surplus of sweet potatoes. Every corner of the country, there was sweet potatoes, and people started feeding the sweet potato animals. And when I was asking myself why sweet potato is considered like this, I say, oh, let me work on it to know exactly why people are taking sweet potato like this. And I decided to work on it, and let alone finish my studies at university. Of course, the same time I was finishing my dissertation. So I realized actually sweet potatoes, the way people are taking it, is not the real one. It's actually good for our country, because 9 out of 10 households, they are growing sweet potatoes. And you talked about the nutrition content of that, the orange fresh sweet potatoes. And then we have a problem of malnutrition for our country. I say, how can I make something different so that people may benefit the nutrition content of these sweet potatoes? So I started thinking about making something from the sweet potatoes. I started making donuts. And but the first idea was making pasta, actually, the macaroni, the noodles from sweet potatoes. I tried so many times and I failed.
So I could have told you that wasn't going to work so well. I wish you'd just given me a phone call and be like, Andile, do you think making pasta from sweet potatoes is going to work well? I'm very fussy with my pasta. In fact, the whole whole wheat pasta thing, I don't get it. I know it's only marginally better than the semolina, regular semolina. And I reckon it's just not worth the discomfort. I'm honest. So I'll just go, if I'm going to go for pasta at all, I'm going to go for the real thing or nothing at all. So anyway, I'm messing with you.
It can be possible. It's a matter of investment. That's why we fed a lot of time. And we didn't get a chance to have some laboratory we were using a traditional method to make it, but it's really feasible. But the problem was investment and also then have some infrastructure or some laboratories to make trials.
And to be fair, I have seen pasta made of vegetable products. And before all of my plant-based friends hit out at me, I need to correct myself. I'm sure there's decent pasta made from sweet potato out there. So I'm going to ask you to carry on your story in a moment. I do want you to factor in Roy here because there's the framing of the notion of impact in your world, right? Listening to Regis unpack his story in this way, does this vibe with the way impact is defined, and does it inform the way in which you look to make impact as a banker?
Yeah, well, I've been focusing on creating jobs, SG number 8, decent work and economic growth, because I think with decent work, you can create a decent life, because with a job, it doesn't mean you only create an income, but you are part of society and you can have a meaningful role in that society. And of course, with that job comes income. And with income, you can pay for your bed, bath and bread, as we say in the Netherlands. You know, those three things, be decent living. And you can also create jobs that gives decent living for other people. So what he has been doing is creating jobs for other people as well, not only for himself, feeding so many families. I mean, he has 12 people employed. Those are 12 families. The 1 million loans I mentioned, I have been providing worldwide. You know, if you would calculate that per family, there are maybe on average 5 people. I've been impacting 5 million people, feeding 5 million people. So this is indeed what impact, social impact means for me, creating jobs.
I wonder if when you started it, how much of, wanting to impact your community was part of your thinking, or was this really just an entrepreneurial burden just to create something great and to make a living? Or was it bigger for you than that?
Actually, the time I was collecting data from farmers, I was shocked because most of the farmers, they were saying that, we are growing it, but it's really a problem when we are harvesting and don't have a market for it. And I remember when I was collecting, I told to them that maybe next year I will come back with a solution. And now I'm so happy when all the time they are supplying sweet potato to my factory. And they, most of those one we worked together when I was collecting the data are so friendly of mine. When they have parties, they invite me because, we are now exchanging. They bring their produce to our factory and we give them the money, and now they are generating incomes. That's what mostly I'm really proud of, because when I see them happy now, I want to reach so many farmers as possible. So, and then making money, it's another, but first of all, adding value to the sweet potatoes, making the farmers making some incomes from the sweet potatoes, but also reducing post-harvest losses of that sweet potatoes.
So it bugged you to see the waste. It bugged you to see people, pouring their hard labor into a crop that wasn't delivering commercial benefit. And I suppose it frustrated you that on the other end of things, malnutrition is a problem.
Exactly. It's one of the problems we have in Rwanda, and almost 30% of our children are having the problem of malnutrition. While we have most of the families who have that problem, they grow the sweet potatoes we are talking about. But people, they don't want to eat sweet potato bread. But when they are eating bread, it's like other foods, you know, they take it as high value food. They buy it, and that's why we are making it more cheap and more affordable to even to those rural people. So that not just growing, but also eating this food from what they produced, and also benefiting their children to fight for malnutrition.
So back to your innovation process, because I think I want to drill down on what innovation looks like. You know, I was making fun, frankly, of your experimentation with, you know, trying to make pasta out of sweet potato. And forget me for a minute, because who am I? What I think you represent is the true face of innovation at grassroots level, right? So talk me through your thinking around why pasta was your first inclination to try, once you realized you didn't have the capacity to deliver on a market-ready product in the pasta space. How did you then decide on bread?
We think about pasta because of the time I was looking something to do. I looked on the market and I found that we import a lot of pasta and no company that produced pasta. I was thinking to make something unique in my country. But later on, I found that even if it requires some high investment, but also the market of the pasta is not really big. People there are not really familiar with the eating pasta. And I say, maybe if I can even find some investment somewhere, but I will never have a market for it. So I say, let me move and find another product, which is easier to make, but also the product that have a demand on the market.
But because of the colonial influence in Rwanda, bread is obviously a big part of the diet of everyone who considers themselves upwardly mobile in Rwanda, right?
In urban area. When you go down in rural area, they took bread as a very expensive things. But up to now, it's becoming a familiar food. But before, it wasn't. It was only in the urban area. But for now, I can say that every person there is, when he doesn't have money to buy food, at least he has some coin to buy bread. So that means there's a huge demand for bread. So that's why we decided bread is really, it has a demand, but I would say it's a good way to bring the nutrition content we are looking from the sweet potato into food which can be consumed on many people as possible. So we say, let's start with the bread. Actually, as I said, we started with the donuts. I don't know if you know donuts, but donuts was not meeting our goals. Cause when you make a donuts, you have to use a lot of sugar and oil to fly in and say, you know, we are targeting health food, and then donuts is not really making healthy food. So let's make a bread at least. So when we are trying to make a bread, was really saying, oh, now we don't have to use sugar. We don't have to use oil, and sweet potato is now successful in a bread. Actually, we worked with a guy from Netherlands to make a recipes. We invited him just to share experience he has in a bakery. And he was the first time seeing the sweet potato bread. But we tried together as a man who experienced in bread making. And then finally we got a recipes, which is now competing on our market.
How does this all play against your thesis of engineering innovation? At a big place like ING, I imagine that there are a lot of smart people who have, you know, and this is how I imagine it. You have these whiteboards with all this, you know, these flow charts of what innovation looks like and how to accelerate it and how to incubate it and how to capture value as, you know, innovation is, you know, becomes, you know, sellable ideas and all these things, all these buzz phrases in your world, perhaps that might be, or, you know, this is my thinking of your world anyway. How does everything Regis has been sharing with you compared to the thinking of what innovation looks like and how to back it at ING?
Well, you're right. I mean, we have our own innovation models and processes. and you pick the right, the brightest ones and put them in a room, and then you brainstorm and then I come up with slides, etc. But basically, it means that you have to go through the business canvas model, and that you look to the market. You know, is there a demand? Will there be the right price? Will people like my bread? Will people like my pasta off of sweet potatoes, etc.? So that market orientation, like he did, you know, the processes, in fact, are the same. And perseverance, you know. I think that is the most important part, you know. When you want to succeed, then you have to go through the process of failing, trial, error, fail again, stand up again, and, you know, have the right spirit to work hard. I mean, that is entrepreneurship and that is innovation. And that's not different from his world and ING world, basically.
As promised, here's a little more about how Spark is making a difference in the world. Spark is a Dutch NGO which provides young entrepreneurs with the tools they need to set up and grow their companies. They consider helping business people access the seed funding they need to get started as a key part of their mandate. Since being founded by two Dutch students a little over 25 years ago, the organization has grown to deliver entrepreneurial support services in 14 of the world's most conflict-affected regions, including Libya, Palestine, and South Sudan. To learn more about Spark and the opportunities they're creating, visit spark.ngo. That's spark.ngo.
Where I come from, the failure part and everything Roy's been talking about, well, that's not so glamorous. That you don't have your family going, oh, go ahead and, you know, figure out how not to be a success, you know? I wonder if culture around entrepreneurship is challenged by that thinking in Rwanda, because I know in Zimbabwe, only a fool would try something that might fail. And it has to be a sure thing. Maybe you can share some of what it was really like to try this and fail, try the next thing. And what did your community make of that?
Actually, I like this conversation because we started making those things. And in 2017, I can say we failed, or we stopped producing because there was some problems happening there. We started without planning. We started from scratch, from zero. We didn't have technical capacity to make a product. We didn't have investment to buy the right equipment. We didn't even know which equipment we are looking for. We were just trying and trying. And the people, when they were trying our product, most of the time there was no consistency in quality. We were using a traditional method to make a bread. Traditional oven, you know, traditional way to proof the bread, that's putting on the sun, waiting for the heat from the sun. And when you put the bread on the oven, you know, there is no regulation of the temperature. Sometimes it went good and other times it's not. When the people are saying, oh, your product is not really good. Sometimes it's good, other times it's not good. And we decided to stop because we didn't earning some money. And but when it comes to the people who was sowing us in our ecosystem, they were saying, you know, oh, Kari Group is now closed. You know, you see, that's how young people do it. And even some ministers, some government officials, they used to say, you failed. But I was not thinking I'm failed, because I was even, we stopped because we want to go back, do some business plan, looking some, you know, different investment, either in the bank or somewhere else. But also we wanted to know exactly where I want to go, but also which investment we are looking for, which equipment we are looking for. So we designed the business plan, and then we sent different to different banks. Finally, we got a fund from one of the government business development fund. And after getting the money, we bought all the equipment, the modern equipment. And then after making the bread, all the people are now coming on me. You know, all the time I receive many guests to my office, like looking for success stories. And even the government officials are now using me as a successful young person. But some years back, they were saying I'm fed.
That's what I call making a success of a brilliant failure. Amazing story. Well done. Yeah.
You were nodding throughout his sharing. I wonder how far removed at times the reality that, you know, Regis is talking about is from the more comfy, you know, high rise offices of a bank like yours. Do you think there's a disconnect in appreciating what, you know, engineering success really looks like, how long it takes, and perhaps the nuances around, you know, what entrepreneurs have to go through in different contexts and what, you know, the role of community and enabling structures, et cetera?
You know, I wish sometimes that I was an entrepreneur and don't have this big organization behind me. And you know, it is also sometimes limiting your flexibility. And for example, I started 1.5 years ago with an innovation. I wanted to build an e-scoring card, you know, for small farmers. Combine satellite data, financial data, social data, and by combining this, make a risk profile of these farmers. And then you could finance them at a much cheaper rate than they are currently paying. Within ING, it was a nightmare, really. You know, this big organization moving towards innovation, small innovation for ING, far away in developing countries, no connection at all, almost impossible to do. It took me 1.5 years. And then when we were almost there, ING said, no, sorry, but it took you too long. You know, you now have to start some new project and put your attention to that part. You know, he has the opportunity to just continue, you know, and again, based on these brilliant failures, he had the time to make the failure. He made a success out of it. And I wish sometimes that I had the opportunity to become independent social entrepreneur and come up with these kind of bright ideas.
Sounds like a little bit of FOMO. And I wonder if it has something to do with how, I suppose, modern day capitalist structures measure or demand progress. And the timelines in which success has to be engineered or created and value has to be captured. Do you think that's part of the problem? I mean, in this context, I mean, Africa, I think broadly speaking, not to lump us all into one big monolith, I think broadly speaking requires a fair bit of time for anything to work and work well. And I wonder if there's a disconnect there, perhaps, in how long, how patient an organization like ING and frankly, anyone else in a similar position might be to offer financial support.
Yeah, indeed. In a commercial environment, time is money. So you have very limited time, you know, and within that time frame, you have to deliver something, you know, MVP, minimal viable product, as we call it. If after 6 months you are not able to deliver that MVP, sorry, but we pull the plug because again, time is money, your time is money, and we have to go to the next innovation. And that is frustrating. And that is also the reason, I think, why new innovations doesn't come from big corporates, but are startups. And at a certain moment, when they are interesting enough, the big corporates come in and buy them. That's how it works. And well, hopefully I will come up with some innovation and later a corporate comes knocking on my door. I want to buy it. Let's go for it.
I want to ask you, Regis, a lot of people believe that the biggest problem founders have and startups have is access to finance. And I don't want to belittle that issue, but I wonder how would have $1 million in the first month you had this idea made a difference to you for better or for worse?
For me, it's not the case. I can say that money, capital or just investment as cash is not the first priority in the startups. What the startups need is just having a technical capability of making things. You can dream, just having an idea, that's first. But second is to have technical skills to make it happen. Just to make a trial or to make some prototype. The third thing, it's about at least entrepreneurial background or skills. You can even learn entrepreneurship. It's not, most of the people cannot born with the entrepreneurial skills, but you can learn how to do business. So if you can have a technical skills, business managerial skills, and then it's easier to make, to have some money or to get even investors. Because most of the time the investors, they are looking, something happened. If you have a product and show the investor that you want to scale up, you want to increase the production, they may invest in you. But if you don't have anything, I'm not sure if they can invest in you. So that's why I believe that finance is not the first thing. The first thing is an idea and those two skills, technical skills and also business management skills. That's what I'm believing in entrepreneurial journey.
This must be music to your ears as a banker, like an entrepreneur who's like, I don't need your money. Is that a novel train of thought? And I mean, there's an oversimplification in that statement, obviously, because there, for every one entrepreneur who feels, you know, the money's the least of their worries, there's at least 100 who say, if they had the finance, you know, they could dream bigger.
Yeah, I think money is not always the solution. I mean, we have seen the big examples like WeWork, for example, to compare with. Money is not always the solution. If the idea is good, the entrepreneur is good, you know, money will follow. Money, in fact, follows a business case, you know. And if there is a business case, it doesn't have to be a financial business case alone. It can also be a social business case. It means if you are able with this innovation to save money for society, for example, it's also a business case, it's a social business case. Yeah. And investment will always follow business cases. So I fully agree with his analysis. And very happy to hear this story, you know, the way he is thinking, his mindset. These are the good entrepreneurs.
What are some of the misconceptions that you encounter most often about the strength of the correlation between financing entrepreneurship and creating jobs?
Again, I think misconception is that if you have enough money, that you'll be able to set up a good business and create jobs. That's not the case. The business, there should be the right idea, the right innovation, the good entrepreneur, you know, knows what he's doing. And then money will accelerate that business. You know, it doesn't start with money. No, it starts with a good idea. Money will come afterwards.
So give us a sense of how big the business is. How many loaves of bread are you baking? If I were to visit Kigali today, would I be able to walk into a supermarket and buy it?
We started actually selling our bread in May this year. So you can't imagine we spent almost 5 years making trials and failed. And now 2019 is where we are selling our bread. But it, because there was a problem of packaging in Rwanda, we did recipes in December last year. But we started selling our final product this May in the supermarket. And now we secured 25 supermarkets. And those supermarkets, it's not the lowest. It's the most largest supermarket is in town. And we are not reaching far because we are still do some marketing to convince people to buy our bread instead of buying other bread. But now we are making 100 loaves a day, and we are going to be the second brand for bread to be certified by Rwanda Standard Board. Why we have so many brands in the market for so many years, but we are going to be the second brand to be certified. And I can say that we are still growing, because by January we'll be launching the biscuit from sweet potatoes, where we will have an automated system to produce biscuit. After launching the biscuit, what we wanted is to make the business where every investor, every bank should trust. And even we are going to launch a biscuit, but it will not be huge production as it is. We want to make it bigger in the future. We want to make sure that those 9 out of 10 household has a market for the sweet potatoes. That means we want to have a big plant where we're having storage facilities for sweet potatoes, a large production facilities for our product, not only biscuit, but also we want to, we tried so many product actually, not only bread and biscuit. There's a famous product in Western countries called the chin chin, mostly made from cassava. And we want to make it by using sweet potato and cassava to make gluten-free product. And we are targeting regional market, but also African market, because now we have a free trade agreement between the African countries. So we are targeting even bigger market, not the small market of Rwanda. So the government already started approaching me to do that. And they asked me to do the concept proposal for that dream. Maybe if I finish to make it, maybe the government will invest, or they will attract different partners to be involved, because they wanted to reduce that post-harvest in the country, but also reducing the malnutrition in the country. That's why maybe they are interested in me. So the proof of concept is there. Now it's time to expand it.
My goodness, it sounds like he's got a sweet potato solar city in the works.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I can imagine like all the sweet potato from the country just being ferried to this place. Have any extra sweet potato in your Rwanda, please send it over.
In Rwanda, when I passed, everyone say, oh, this is a sweet potato guy. There's some people doesn't know, even know my name. They just, oh, this is a sweet potato man. So that's how we are doing it in Rwanda.
The role of institutions and structures, governments have a role to play. Legacy institutions have a role to play. NGOs and grant funding organizations of any kind have a role to play. You know, speak to those of our listeners who might be tempted to undermine the role of institutions and formal structures in manufacturing a story like Regis's.
We are enablers, you know, as a bank, for example, we are in a position to attract money, savings money, and channel it to entrepreneurship. With that role, I think we are able to make this kind of businesses possible. And I really wonder how Regis was being supported by the banks. Do you have a bank loan or financial services?
Actually, a business development fund is it's a bank that government set for to support the women and the young entrepreneurs, and they do have different programs. So they have one program that are supporting youth who are in agribusiness, mostly those who graduate from university and want to venture into agribusiness. So one part, they of course they have limited fund.
What ticket size do they typically fund?
For that specific program, the limitation is 11,000 USD, and they have a grant for it. 30% is a grant, and then 70% it's a loan. And also, of course, we pay back in a flexible way, 12%. The African bank rate is really high. Ours is almost 16 to 18 annual. So they say we pay back in 5 years within 12% of interest. For collateral, they can take it from your equipment you buy from their money instead of asking the land of something, because most of us, we don't have access to those land and the infrastructures. But when they buy the equipment, they say this equipment is for us within years, and after paying back all the money, it's yours. It's okay for me. I'm there to make something happen. So
create a vehicle, it sounds like.
He mentioned a very important thing, you know, the cost of money, 16%. I mean, that's huge. And that's why I wanted to innovate this impactor, to bring down the cost of money to maybe half of that percentage by using new technologies, e-scoring card, e-KYC, e-monitoring, etc., and create access to finance at a much cheaper rate than is being done now. And that is also innovation. There's a financial innovation to make possible that the entrepreneur can do their innovations.
But I mean, listening to this, I mean, it sounds to me there's a flexibility and a willingness to be creative around supporting entrepreneurs that isn't typical of most governments, I'd say, whether in Africa or anywhere else, frankly. And then the other thing that struck me as well is everything you've talked about, you've achieved with that level of support. I mean, it's really modest, wouldn't you say, Roy?
Yeah, certainly. Sure. And really, I'm surprised that you have been able to do it without financial services. I mean, it's very bad for our business, but I'm really, really happy that, I mean, again, this is a very successful entrepreneur, in my opinion.
I just love the connection you guys have. You used to sell sweet potato. You make it into bread. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show.
Actually, I want to mention that on my card is direct and co-founder. I want to be a CEO when I have 100 people in my factory. So I don't want to be a CEO for now, but I'm planning to be a CEO when I'm having 100 people in the factory.
Until then, you're going to keep your card?
I will turn my card when I'm having 100 people working with my factory. If not, still keep that one.
CEO on the way, I think, Roy, don't you think?
Good luck, man. Yeah, well done. Thanks.
Good luck, man.